You are listening to The Bird Calls. For more breakdowns on the Pelicans, including interviews with coaches, journalists, and opposing experts, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. Right, what's up, Pels fans, and welcome to the Bird Calls. I'm joined here with David Fisher immediately following the Pelicans thumping, of the Portland Trailblazers. David, we anticipated with everything going into this matchup, the two zip lead, Manny Fresh being in the building, the sellout, the red out, that this was probably going to be a Pelicans victory. It was going to take a momentous performance from the Trailblazers to win this one, but this was just a straight-up butt-whooping, and not just by the Pelicans alone. The Trailblazers did a lot to themselves. 21 turnovers with just 26 made baskets with 10 minutes left in this game. What happened? Was it the Pelicans, did they just blow the roof off the Smoothie King Center, or did the Trailblazers just not come to play?
Oh, my goodness. I can't even – I mean, going back especially to the – Mirotić doing everything, and Portland is pressing so hard. Like, Portland was putting forth so much effort to get bad shots. Like, to put that much effort forth that they were putting forth today just to set up an Alfarico Mino jumper, that's what the Pelicans are giving them anyways. That's always there. I was shocked. I mean, what did you think? I was just blown away.
I mean, the Blazers have come out tight, in my opinion, early in the first and the third quarters of each game, and that's allowed the Pelicans to get a comfortable lead, play from ahead in much of these games. And in this one, of course, they allowed Alfarico Mino. I think he had 15 points in the first half. That was okay. C.J. McCollum actually wasn't a disaster. He did turn the ball over quite a few times, but he was something like 7 of 13 to 16 points early in the third quarter. Damian Lillard is the one that's really blowing my mind here, because, of course, when Jrue Holiday's matched up against him in the first two games, he had held him to 7 points, but Terry Stotts has to work out some kind of scheme to get Jrue Holiday off him to utilize those pick and rolls. Yusuf Nurkić using that high screen role in game two allowed him to get something like, I don't remember, 15 points in the first half. They had 34 points in the paint in the first half in game two. He was non-existent tonight. Okay, we've got Chris Connor joining us. What is up, Chris?
What's going on, man? I finally made it.
Chris, I'm so glad you're here. We're also joined by David Fisher. Before we get into the game, Chris, and talk about what you've seen, you kind of predicted this in a not-so-turnaround way. Your article, 2018 NBA Playoffs, Jrue Holiday and New Orleans are in midst of enjoying last laugh at expense of Damian Lillard and Portland. You wrote this before tonight's game, and here they are having the last laugh, up 3-0. NBA teams are 127-0 in series in which they lead by 3-0. Talk about your article, plug it a little bit, and tell us about what you saw tonight.
Well, it was an article that was mainly around Jrue Holiday. And basically I had watched all that morning a lot of national media platforms basically give love to players that weren't named Anthony Davis or DeMarcus Cousins, love for the first time in a while. And I started to think, seeing all these different, people kind of, come to grips with what they were watching, and it made me think, well, this is odd, and we probably need to put out something about this. And, it already felt like it was Jrue Holiday's coming out party, so to speak, because I believe that was actually the original title that I was going with. But it just was mainly surfaced around him and what he's done in the series, defensively and offensively, how rare he is and vastly underrated. And it's fun to watch it all come to light and watch these Pelicans play the way they're playing, man.
Man, before I get back to Fish, I want to do a follow-up with you, Chris. We were talking about the Trailblazers playing tight. Of course, the Pelicans played incredible basketball all three games, both defensively and offensively. Specifically tonight, it was their highest scoring clip. They had just about the same amount of shots, 87 shots, but they shot 53%, 119 points, a lot of easy looks. With that being said, the Blazers did a lot to beat themselves. Yusuf Nurkić, after utilizing that high pick and roll, I was just telling David, in the first half in game two, had only two 2 points in the first half tonight on 1 of 4. Damian Lillard, again, 5 of 14. He had 8 turnovers. Chris, kind of balance the scale for us. How much of this was good Pelicans basketball, and how much of this was the Blazers just getting caught as a deer in the headlights in a big game?
I mean, I think it was a mix of both. I think the Pelicans came out with a lot of energy. I mean, they had active hands. They played together. Well, they continued to play together as one. They had the home crowd behind them. The adrenaline was going. But I mean, you saw the Blazers commit. You know, I think if you had to tip the scale a little bit, you would say it was a little bit, or at least in my opinion, a little bit more so on the Blazers' hand. You know, because they were turning the ball over 3 and 4 times, you know, in a row, as you know, during some stretches, just, you know, simple passes that they make, you know, in their sleep, just over and over again. And it wasn't just, you know, one or two guys, you know, it was all around the squad. You know, I think it was a mix of both, but, you know, the Blazers look very uncharacteristically, you know, tight, and from Dame, and we've seen a lot of the clutch performances that him and CJ have both put up in a bunch of different type of games. It was very weird and odd to see them just so out of place for once.
Now, I'm going to ask Chris about Meritage. Before I do that, Fish, one of the editors of thebirdrights.com, you've been battling on this site, keeping the blog going for years and years with Ali Cosell. And of course, this is probably the best moment in New Orleans basketball history, dating back to when we got the team back in the 2002-2003 season. Talk about the experience with this victory versus some of those Chris Paul years, of course, in that famous series with San Antonio that went to Game 7 in the second round, right before the Western Conference Finals. How do you weigh this game, this moment, against some of the greater moments in Pelicans history?
Well, it's kind of hard when you put it like that, because there was a moment in that Spurs series where you really thought that the Hornets at the time, the Hornets, were going to get past the Spurs, and they were going to get into the Western Conference Finals, and they were just rolling. And I think how the Spurs series ended has shaded how we look at that entire season all the way up until, I can't remember if it's Game 3 or Game 4. It might even be later. It might even be Game 5 when the wheels kind of came off and the Hornets went from in control of the series to completely and totally flailing. And I think historically, looking back on it now, we remember it for all of it. And we don't remember how we would have felt like through Game 3 or through Game 4 of that series against the Spurs. So I do want to pump the brakes on this. This is a huge win for the franchise, because if you think back throughout the history of the franchise, I want to say they've only won 2 or 3 playoff series in the franchise's history. And since I moved down here into New Orleans, they've only won 2 playoff games before this series, which was the 2 games over the Lakers in the 2010-2011 season. Was that? Yeah, 2010-2011 season, the last season of Chris Paul before he demanded the trade. So, but how huge this particular moment is has to be tied into what we think it's going to mean in terms of retaining DeMarcus Cousins, because he was there on the bench today. They introduced him, and it was the third quarter. They showed him on the big screen, and then the Boogie chants going on through the arena, and what it means for retaining Boogie and what retaining Boogie means for the franchise's direction as a whole, I think, is how we might shape what does this game mean or this series mean for the Pelicans long term.
Yeah, well, hopefully it means that we can get him at a bit of a discount. I know the hope and the goal is that he gets some kind of 1-1 or a 2-year guarantee, and then he'll have that ability at the 10-year mark of his career to get that super max. Chris, I don't know how old you are, and I don't want to age you right here, but I want to recall the 2006 Katrina New Orleans Saints game, the Steve Gleason punt. Obviously, it doesn't have the emotion tied to it of that moment. However, this does feel like the next next step in New Orleans Pelicans history in the city of New Orleans. It feels like a real energy is going to develop behind this unit going forward into next season with DeMarcus Cousins coming back. It's only going to get bigger and better regardless of what happens in the ensuing series. Did you feel an energy like that in New Orleans? I know you weren't at the game tonight, and we will talk to some of the guys who have been there. But just from the energy around our friends, Manny Fresh being there with Juvenile at halftime, is there something reminiscent of that moment in New Orleans sports history developing right now?
I think from the perspective of the confidence that was surrounded by it, as well as just, you know, it was like nothing else really mattered. Like, you know, for once, like, there was really no thought of, you know, you didn't have to think about, you know, the future. You weren't thinking about the past. You didn't have to, you know, you weren't dwelling on, you know, on Boogie's injury, you know, as much. You know, you were thinking about exactly what was in front of you, and that's watching a wonderful basketball team that, you know, that is on a fantastic ride. And, you know, and that 2006 season, because I am old enough to remember it, you know, it was fairly similar. You know, you really weren't sure where the team was necessarily going to go, but you weren't thinking about it at that time. You just knew you had something special there. Of course, that team ended up losing in the NFC Championship game that year, but it was the building block for something special. And though it didn't happen right away, a few years later, you end up seeing a Super Bowl. I'm, you know, not sure where this team will go. But I could see how you make that comparison. You know, just the focus, the confidence, the energy involved. I wasn't as nervous as I normally am watching Pelicans game. I was probably as relaxed as I could possibly be, or that I remember being in any, you know, watching any game in some time, which was a little bit odd.
Fish, let's talk about Nikola Mirotic. The final five regular season games of the year, 25, 31, 28, 24, and 21, had his highest scoring career playoff game tonight with 30, was on fire all night long. Talk a bit about his performance, the shaving of the beard. Ever since he was reinserted into the starting lineup with that new fresh razor shave, he has just been a completely different human being in New Orleans. How has he put it all together? And just talk about how incredible he was on the defensive side of the floor tonight.
Well, first, and I saw SB Nation actually tweeted about Mike Prada, and I want to press this point. So much of what the success that Mirotić is having at this point is because he's playing so many of his minutes with Anthony Davis. Because the attention that Anthony Davis draws when he sets a screen, when he rolls to the basket, just when he's present anywhere, and the attention it's drawing is what's getting Mirotić a lot of the open looks that he's getting right now. And Mirotić, how he's really approaching the game, I don't feel like has changed a whole lot from when he was struggling. He's still being ultra aggressive. He's still looking for his shot. I would say that since he's been paired with Anthony Davis, he's getting his feet underneath him more often on those shots, which is why he's been more successful than he has, before he shaved the beard. But in terms of the general aggressiveness, I mean, some of those reverse layups that he made today on hard cuts to the basket and things like that, those aren't all that unrelated to the shots that he was missing when half of, you know, Pelicans Twitter was bashing him because he was playing terribly. It's just the ball's going in the hoop now. And once the ball starts to go in the hoop, the entire team is getting so confident. The cross-court pass he had from the left corner to the right corner, setting up Ian Clark for a wide open three. Clark missed the shot. But before the ball was even out of his hands, Mirotić was already celebrating. That is a confidence that I don't think we've ever seen on this team. And then there was the play just before that, before Anthony Davis came out of the game, when he dunked on Nurkic and Drew Holiday is pointing at Nurkic. As the ball is bouncing off the floor. And that kind of, it's not just confidence, like there's legitimate swagger on this team. And we haven't seen that yet. And I think it's kind of a give and take that they're feeding that to the crowd at this point, and the crowd is just lapping it up and giving it back to them tenfold. And that was what I saw happening tonight.
12 of 15.
With Mirotić especially getting it started too.
Yeah, 12 of 15, 4 of 6 from three-point range. The Pelicans' big four, as we've been calling them through these playoffs, combined for 90 points. Before we press on, we got a question from Travis Tate that I want to pose to Fish, and then I'll throw it back over to Chris. And he says, this is the best win in Hornets-Pelican history since question mark. And we kind of just covered that, but let's get a little bit more specific for him.
Because I want to make sure that I get the exact game right. So let me throw it
over to Chris, and then we'll get back to you. Chris, let's talk about the big four that's kind of developing in New Orleans right now. Of course, Nikola Mirotić, Anthony Davis, Rajon Rondo, and Jrue Holiday. Etuan Moore was still playing some steady defense. Definitely want to give him a lot of credit, as well as some of the guys from the bench who played a lot better tonight, I thought, than they did in game two. With that being said, Jrue Holiday, Rajon Rondo, Anthony Davis, Nikola Mirotić, these guys have definitive chemistry on the court right now. They're all playing great basketball. All four of them had 16 or more points. All four of them shot better than 50% from the field. Just an incredible game by these guys. How is it all clicking together for them right now, Chris?
I mean, man, it's very beautiful to watch. But yeah, I think, you know, you're watching four guys that trust each other. Four guys that have all been there. Well, Nico hasn't been there as long as, say, you know, as AD and, you know, and Drew and Rondo from the beginning of the year. But, you know, you're looking at four guys that have all had their ups and downs this season, you know, and they've all supported each other. I mean, that's just really what this team, you know, has done. They've all wrapped their arms around each other. They haven't quit on, you know, at any part of the season. They haven't quit on the guy next to them. And these four, you know, they have unique type of chemistry. You know, AD and Drew, you know, have been together. You know, since AD, you know, what, a year after he was drafted, Rondo and Nico go back to Chicago. It's just, you know, it's different. I would definitely say, but, you know, I think more than anything, you know, it's kind of interchangeable. If one isn't in, you know, the other one still has the same amount of trust. And I think, you know, going through some of these tough battles throughout the season and some of these, you know, some of these tough mental stretches and, you know, the ups and downs, the highs and lows have kind of brought this team as tight-knit of a group as we've ever seen in New Orleans.
Fish, jump in whenever you're ready. Otherwise, I'm just going to continue with – you ready? All right, go for it.
Well, I mean, and I kind of want to reiterate what I was saying about that Spurs series, is because how we look at it now is shaped so much by Game 6 and 7 and not by the Hornets are up 3-2. They have a chance to close out this series and go to the conference finals, because that was the year you're talking about. That was the Kobe Bryant year, where Kobe Bryant stole the MVP from Chris Paul. Chris Paul was clearly the better player that season, and the NBA had never gotten around to giving Kobe Bryant an MVP award, so he kind of got a career achievement award. So. And there was a moment there. The Hornets are up 3-2 on the Spurs. They're going into game six. And then the whole story changes, and how we look at all of that changes.
All right. We've got Kevin Beefer Bounce joining us. David, go ahead and finish what you were saying, and then we're going to introduce Kevin to the group.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, not relying too much on hindsight, the games that you really have to put on that pantheon of Pelican wins are that Spurs series game five, the game at the end of the 2015 season that the Pelicans got into the playoffs on the final season, night of the season, beating the Spurs, probably the last, what, they're on a seven-game winning streak right now, right? I mean, the last seven games have all been just incredible. The Pelicans haven't just won. They have seized control of just about every game now for seven games, and they haven't played a single cupcake for 2 weeks now.
Yeah, it's eight games straight now. We got to get you to change that handle.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, you look what they're doing. You know what it is that I'm just kind of blacking out the Phoenix Suns game. I'm just like, whatever, that was just a throwaway. And I'm starting at the Golden State Warriors game. But you go from there on. I mean, Golden State Warriors. Yeah, the Clippers might have not been given all of the effort. But then they blew the doors off the Spurs. And the first two games against Portland, the first game they seized control and then they held on for dear life. The second game, Portland came out strong, but then the Pelicans seized control in the third quarter and kind of held on for dear life towards the end. And then tonight they decided, well, what if we play for 3.5 quarters and we give them, 100% effort, maximum effort for 3.5 quarters. And you saw what happened. There was a point where it felt like the Portland Trailblazers quit. Like they were just done. Lillard had nothing else. That was it. I'm looking at Kevin Durant right now laying on the floor at center court looking not well and thinking about what that means for the second round, man.
I'm going to throw this over to Kevin B for Bounce. We've got a question regarding Steph Curry and the status of the point guard for the Golden State Trailblazers in addition to Kevin Durant. I'll look that up in a minute. And Steve Kerr reveals truth on when the Warriors star will return. Don't want to get ahead of ourselves. It's up 3-0. It seems like it's locked down. With that being said, the Pelicans still need to close this out on Saturday. But according to this report from Daily Express, Stuart Ballard publishes that Steph Curry is definitively out for this round, and there is a chance that he will not even be set to return by round two. So the Pelicans can advance, and Golden State does in fact sweep San Antonio. The series would start a little bit sooner, and the Pelicans might get the advantage there. Again, this is the Bird Calls. It's raw, it's uncut, it's unedited. We're getting an immediate reaction following the game. We are now joined by Kevin. You can follow him at Kevin B for Bounce if you don't know who he is already. And Kevin, you were at the game. Take us through the emotions of the night.
Oh man, it was crazy in there. It was like if anybody has seen Wild Wild Country, it felt like that in there. One of those crazy, like sort of tantrum culty things where everybody's wearing red. It was unbelievable. And after Mirotić hit that first shot, the crowd didn't want to sit down. They kept standing until then Portland scored and kind of took the steam out of it for a second. Then everybody sort of slowly eased themselves back in their chairs. But I mean, the energy in there was phenomenal. It's what you've been wanting, for this team to have this sort of passion from the fan base for a while now. And I think it's here, and hopefully it's here to stay. I would assume you got to consider Portland after this game is got a night off, a Friday night off in New Orleans after getting their butts whipped like that and, losing out at home. You got to think vacation starting early for them, and game four Saturday, early start. We should come out and just put our foots on their throat and look ahead. If that energy's back, then there's no way they're walking out of there and we have to go back to Portland. It's not going to happen.
Now, I definitely want to come back to Kevin and ask some questions about Manny Fresh and Juvenile. With that being said, I need to get my guys some touches, keep everybody fresh. Let's go back to Chris, and let's talk about Rajon Rondo and Drew Holiday. Let's start with Rajon Rondo, 16 points, 11 assists. We've seen playoff Rondo in full force. And of course, this conversation has been a heavy topic around national media types, is that playoff Rondo has been activated. Are you seeing the same guy that you saw throughout the regular season, or do you think he has taken it up another level? And what do you attribute to the change there, Chris?
Well, I think he's definitely picked it up defensively. He seems a lot more actively engaged, play to play. He's not taking as many plays off on that end. Offensively, I think with him, he's one of the smartest guys in the NBA. If you give him one team to study, for a certain amount of period, they have to win the best four out of seven games against. I think that puts you in a good spot. Maybe game to game over the stretch of 82, game series, maybe isn't going to be his thing. But you give him a playoff series in which he has to worry about one team, and as you see, he's calling out the Blazers sets. you know, he's telling other guys, he's telling guys on the Blazers where they need to be before they know. You know, so I think he's picked it up on one side of the floor. Offensively, you know, he's having, it feels like he has the ball in his hands a little bit more. Gentry's letting him play a lot more than he was before. He has full control over the game. The guys trust him. They're going to him based off his playoff experience, because it's one of the reasons that they brought him in, his leadership. You know, I mean, I think we've seen a lot of different masterful offensive performances, you know, for him in flashes throughout the season. Right now, it's just him dialing things completely in, being focused on, you know, on the task at hand, and playing wonderful basketball with his guys, man.
Yeah, and that question about Steph Curry was from Riker Toledano. Great stuff from Chris Connor. Of course, you can follow him again at Impatient Bull. I want to keep harping that home because this is the first time we've had him on the Bird Calls podcast. Thank you again so much for joining us. Before I go to Fish, I'm definitely going to ask some Alvin Gentry questions to Fish about his performance, what this means for his future going forward with the Pelicans. Maybe a bit of anyway, we'll get to that in a second. I want to go back to Kevin, because David Fisher was just talking about the Pelicans establishing a swagger. Nikola Mirotic shoots a three and starts celebrating before it goes in, a la Swaggy P. You've got Anthony Davis with that follow putback where Jrue Holiday is pointing down at Yusuf Nurkic. From the perspective of a fan in the building, how much of that could you see? And do you feel like the Smoothie King Center itself is developing some kind of swagger right now?
Yeah, you can see a lot of that from, or at least from where I'm sitting. And I sit behind the bench, so I see all the bench celebrations. I see Boogie Bear hugging Darren Erman on the sideline on the bench, you know. And when Drew and AD checked out, Drew was really hyping the crowd up along the sideline. So it's good to see him showing that sort of emotion and that passion, you know, which was something that we used to complain about with him. And we're starting to really see him embrace this role of an aggressor and a defensive stopper and a scorer for us. You know, it's like when he goes, I mean, he rarely gets to the free throw line, but if he does, you know, we should start chanting co-MVP, because like without him, you know, this wouldn't be what it is. And he's the one that's keeping it really all together. His perimeter defense has completely changed this series. And, you know, having him, you see a lot of him guiding, just staying on like a ball handler like Lillard or whoever he's guarding at the time, staying with him all the way under the basket, where if he tries to take that shot, it's contested anyway. But Anthony Davis is allowed to play off of Al-Farouq Aminu, play free safety, and they come over and collapse on him, and there's just nothing Portland can do. I mean, even if you don't get the help defense, Drew's primary defense there is just so incredible, and it's just the crowd is sensing it. Everybody's like on the edge of their chair, standing up almost the whole game. It was fantastic.
Fish, let's go back over to you. Let's talk about some of the head coaching stuff done in this series, specifically keeping Mirotic in the lineup, and more specifically the way that they played on defense, the trapping, the double teaming, the way they've been able to confuse and shut down guys like Damian Lillard and Yusuf Nurkic. A lot of that has to be attributed to Darren Erman. Chris Finch had to change the way the Pelicans played offense, just getting 85 shots per game, when for a large part of the last 2 months, they had been averaging as many as 100 shots per game with the quickest pace in the NBA. They had to change a bit of the way they were doing that against this Blazers team that had the 19th slowest pace in the NBA. A lot of that credit you can give to Rajon Rondo. A lot of it you can give to Chris Finch. A lot of it you can give to Darren Erman. How much are you giving to Alvin Gentry?
Oh, I mean, I'm giving the lion's share of it to Alvin Gentry, because ultimately he's the one that would bear the responsibility if it was going south. So you have to give and take there. If you're going to give him, you know, if you're going to give him the blame, you know, if the game plan goes south, then you have to give him the credit when it's going well. And the game plan that he and the rest of the staff, especially, you know, Darren Erman defensively and Chris Finch, you know, more in an offensive capacity, has been outstanding. They are, I mean, my key matchup when we did our roundtable in this series was going to be the coaching matchup. And I'm pretty confident in saying that the Pelican staff right now is running circles around what Portland's doing. Portland keeps on trying to go back to the same well. They're trying it different ways, and they're trying to add on different little spicy things that are happening off the ball. But fundamentally, what they want to do is they want to run high screen and roll. And the Pelicans' response to that has been, we are going to aggressively attack either McCollum or Lillard off the bounce. And we are going to either force them the ball out of their hands, or we're going to force them to take a poor shot. And there at the end, towards the end of the, not the end, probably the middle of the fourth quarter, Lillard runs another high screen. He's moving to the right wing. And for some reason, he's so frustrated. He's so discombobulated. He attempts a three-point shot over Anthony Davis. And I can't remember the guard that was in the shot at the time. Maybe it was Drew Holiday or Etwan Moore, but it's a terrible shot. It's even by Lillard's, you know, standards of what he can turn into a good shot, it's a terrible shot. And the Pelicans have thoroughly confused the Portland Trailblazers, but at the same time, the adjustments the Portland Trailblazers have made in terms of trying to put more window dressing around the basic play, the Pelicans are just ignoring all of it. They don't care. They have their game plan is clear. It doesn't matter how many jump shots Al-Farouq Aminu makes. It doesn't matter how much playmaking Nurkic makes off that short roll. They're going to force the ball out of the guard's hands, and they're going to make everyone else on the floor beat them. And then off of that, they're going to just rotate like madmen. And they are executing it to perfection.
Now, before sorry, go ahead, Fish.
No, go ahead, please.
No, sorry.
It's just clear.
I jumped the gun. You're really good at taking those emotional breaks, and I'm so used to Ali and Kevin. They whenever they take a break, that usually I just jump right in. So, but I'm jumping the gun here. I'm very excited. I'm looking at this tweet from Real GM right now. I don't know if you guys are seeing this on your smartphones. Kevin Durant sprains his ankle, losing the ball to Patty Mills. One of you had brought it up. I think it was Fish earlier. And this is a horrifying looking sprain, you guys. His foot bends over in half. Best wishes to him. With that being said, there's a lot that we'll need to talk about in advance of the series that we potentially will have to play with Golden State, or who knows, depending on the severity of this injury. Anything could happen in San Antonio going forward. I think the Warriors are up 2-0 right now. So anything can change. With that being said, let's go back to Chris. Chris, Saturday's coming up. It looks like a slam dunk. Kevin was just saying that the Trailblazers could potentially start their vacation early. However, you have to think these guys have a lot of pride. What do you think it's going to take in New Orleans, not just to keep focused? These guys have been saying all the right things. Rajon Rondo has been saying, Alvin Gentry even said in a press conference before the game today that when everybody got back in the Moda Center following game two, Rajon Rondo said, we haven't won anything yet. Let's all just settle down. You have to think he's preaching that right now. Chris Mannix of Yahoo Sports said that Rajon Rondo's in front of his locker watching game film from tonight's game. And I think more than anything else, that's just a message to the other guys that we can't let up. We can't, I don't know. This isn't in the bag yet. With that being said, Saturday night, Chris, what do the Pelicans have to do to remain focused and just, like Kevin said, just put their foot on their throats at this point?
They can't start drinking the Kool-Aid as most people would say. The cool thing about this team is that they don't really appear to really have many cocky personalities on it. There's a lot of humble cats that are running around there. And while Rondo, you know, someone may confuse his arrogance for cockiness, and I'm sure, I mean, there's a level to it there. He's very intelligent. He's the one as the leader of the team. He's the one that's spearheading. Listen, we're not done. And if one of your best players, your most important pieces, are going to the locker room after you're up 3-0, while some may feel fairly fat and full, and he's watching tape, you know, the other guys are taking suit. They know, okay, you know, this is serious. We got to come out here and destroy these guys. As long as they come out and continue this business-like approach and continue doing the same things that they're doing, because Portland, they're out of answers. They've shown you what they can do. They don't have another trick to pull out the bag. You know, some thought that maybe Shabazz Napier might help them out. They don't have. They're out of answers. This is what they're going to do. They're going to live and die by Dame and CJ. And while both of those guys are capable of getting you 40. New Orleans isn't allowing it. So as long as New Orleans continues to keep this humble approach and those guys are preaching the same things that they have been, I don't see any reason for them to come in relaxed or complacent in front of what should be a nice drunk crowd Saturday.
Kevin, we definitely have a lot of questions. Everybody's anxious to move on to Golden State already. With that being said, I want to wrap up by talking about Anthony Davis. You know the popular storyline. He doesn't have enough help. He's gone into a Russell Westbrook mentality to finish out the season. He had those four back-to-back games where he's averaging 40 and 15. However, he's almost been a forgotten storyline these playoffs, with the exception of those highlight reel alley-oops that he's been getting regularly from Rajon Rondo and Jrue Holiday. Tonight, for example, Rajon Rondo, everybody's talking about playoff Rondo. Everybody's talking about Jrue Holiday locking down Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Everybody's talking about the freshly shaven Nikola Mirotic scoring 30 points going off on both ends of the floor. Meanwhile, all five of these starters contribute for 14 steals in this game, compelling defense. And then you've got Anthony Davis, just a month ago, thought to have had no help. Now you look around and he might not be the best player on the floor. Now, obviously, I'm exaggerating. He is the best player on the team. But with the level that everyone's playing, you could say that all four of these guys are playing at an equal clip, supporting each other in different ways. How nice do you think it must feel to be Anthony Davis with just 2 years left on his contract and seeing these wonderful role players around him putting up such a stunning upset on a three-seeded Blazers?
Yeah, I mean, the defensive scheme has been fantastic, and it's what's allowed Anthony Davis to be the help instead of relying on help, because you have Mirotic playing very versatile, and then, you know, obviously, Etuan Moore, Rajon Rondo, and of course, Jrue Holiday are locking down the perimeter, and whoever's on Al-Farouq Aminu can just drift, and usually that seems to be Anthony Davis a lot, drifting off of him and just playing center field. And when everybody else has already got it locked down, I mean, it's incredible. And he can just be that help defender that is, like, insanely dynamic. And then you see him just coming out of nowhere on putback dunks and things like that. I mean, he's totally energized. And that's the thing, without having to make him be the first option or forcing it into him, making him play super aggressive on the offensive end, you know, his energy lasts throughout the whole game. He doesn't look drained at the end of the game. Of course, he was able to get some rest in this one because of the lead we put up. But yeah, I mean, it's got to be great to not have to be the guy, but still be the guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. He had his quietest performance in game two with just 22 points. That's all that it needed, while Jrue Holiday poured in 33. Tonight, he was back to a season average with 28 and 11, pretty much right on the numbers there. Of course, should mention that he jammed his thumb late in the second quarter when he went up for a rebound with Al-Farouq Aminu, had to go back to the locker room for a moment, came back out. Of course, in game two, Nikola Mirotic badly sprained his ankle twice, but returned both times to game action. And of course, he played somewhere around 30 minutes tonight. Wow. 30 points in 30 minutes. Not a bad night for Nikola Mirotic. Fish, let's wrap this up. Any final thoughts on this game before we press on to potentially looking forward to Golden State?
I think somehow we are underselling how awesome Anthony Davis has been in this series. He hasn't had the kind of big offensive explosion I think all of us were expecting at some point. Not to say that he hasn't been great offensively, but offensively isn't where he's making his money to this series. And I mean, tonight he had what, 28 and 11. We pass that off as, you know, oh, you know, Anthony Davis, he was just kind of there. He put up 28 and 11, pretty much his regular season average. That's incredible. Step one, in a playoff game. And part two of that is the fact what he's doing on defense is allowing the guards to be as aggressive as they have been. The Pelicans could not defend Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum the way they are in this series if it wasn't for the fact that Anthony Davis is behind them, cleaning up everything, threatening every single shot, trapping up top. There was a point early in the fourth quarter, he challenges McCollum three-pointer at the top of the arc. When the shot goes up, Jusuf Nurkić is on the right block. Anthony Davis corralled the rebound in the right corner. Think about that for a second. Anthony Davis challenged the shot 24 feet from the basket, turned around and got the rebound in the far corner from him, when another big man should have been right there on top of it already. That is just a microcosm of what Anthony Davis was doing. Another time he blocked a shot and he got just a little bit of Damian Lillard's wrist and they called the foul, but Damian Lillard had two steps on him and Anthony Davis was at the 3-point line. Davis still recovers, still changes the shot. The Blazers guards are terrified of Anthony Davis right now because it seems like there must be three or four of him out there. He is everywhere. He is affecting every single shot. He is still, and I know we've given Drew Holiday a lot of credit because Drew Holiday has been doing a lot. I know we've been given playoff Rondo credit because he's been incredible. He's attacking. He's willing to shoot, and it's so much of Rondo's effectiveness right now is not only the fact that he's making the shots that he's taking, but he's letting the opponent know that he's actually going to take shots. Nikola Mirotic tonight was incredible, but all of it is still centered around Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is not just the superstar and he's kind of having a so-so series. Anthony Davis is having an incredible series. And all of the things, all of the successes that the other players around him are having is due to how incredible he is, offensively and defensively. Offensively, he's making the job easier for everyone. And defensively, he's making everything happen.
Definitely. And that's why he's going to finish second in the MVP voting this year. He's been like this all season long, even with DeMarcus Cousins. He was still averaging 27-11, and he was right around that tonight. And he does it on both sides of the floor. A lot of guys in New Orleans arguing why he should be the best NBA defensive player in the NBA. Of course, he's probably going to make all-team defense again. He was second team last year as well as first team all-NBA. It was all tongue-in-cheek, the comments about Anthony Davis just being one of four guys out there. Of course, we know it all starts and it all ends with Anthony Davis, and the things that he's able to do physically on both ends of the floor just doesn't make a whole lot of sense, to be frank. And I know that I'm speaking about specifically that putback dunk over Al-Farouq Aminu whenever Drew Holiday reached out at Yusuf Nurkic late in the third. That's the popular one to draw from. But again, just a ho-hum, what was it, three steals and two blocks. See, it's below his average. That's how good he's been lately. Let's go over to Chris. Let's get some final thoughts on this one from you, and then we'll head to Golden State.
It's fun watching everyone play with confidence. It's fun watching everyone play as one, no matter who's on the floor. It was really exciting. I was about 7 minutes left, I think, when they took out all the remaining starters. I was watching the game at the gym, and I was actually gonna leave, and I saw they put in Jamal Crawford. It was fun to see instant grits, and I mean, you know, His first shot, it's a long three, shoots, it goes in, and the bench erupts, man. It's just, you know, it's not only is it fun to watch them have that swagger, them have confidence, them not being rattled in any sort of situation or, you know, any obstacle in front of them. It's fun watching them just love each other, you know. I haven't seen it, you know, in quite, well, maybe not ever. I do remember, when the Hornets made it to the playoffs and arguably should have beat the Spurs that series. And I remember in the first series, them playing Dallas and, you know, and how much fun they had in a series in which some people ended up picking Dallas, you know. But, you know, this team, you know, they're walking around with this me against the world type of mentality. A lot of people picked them to lose again. And instead of, you know, making it a tight series and going to game seven or six and making mistakes, taking plays off or games off, they're coming out and putting their foot on the throat of these guys. That aggression, it's really, really good to see. It's what good teams should do. You should be able to take care of the teams that you are clearly better than. And it was one of the problems that we had with the Pelicans throughout the season, them losing, you know, to teams or letting teams, after they should have them put away, them letting them come back into the game. And there was none of that here against Portland. They put them away, and, you know, they're going to come out more than likely with the same mentality to put them away Saturday, man. was beautiful. They left zero room for the Trailblazers to find anything positive to think about going into game four.
That's Chris Connor. Follow him at Impatient Ball. If you can't hear Fish in the background, that's because his baby's crying. He's on mute. We'll bring him back when he's ready. Let's head over to Kevin B for Bounce. We haven't had him for very long. So, Kevin, we've got some questions from Dogs on Top, Ryker Toledano, as well as Michael Flynn. Basically, they're looking ahead, Kevin. Why don't you wrap up this one for us and then answer this for us? Is it too soon to start looking ahead to Golden State?
I don't think it is because, I mean, 3-0, you know, you have home court advantage. You've seen nothing out of Portland that makes you think that they can rally, especially with one more in New Orleans before we would have to head back to Portland. Especially they keep trying to play the same way and start reverting their offense to trying to run things through guys that aren't their stars because their stars can't get off. And, you know, I think with the defense that you're seeing from the Pelicans, I think that alone is enough for you to win the game. So if the offense isn't, if we're not as hot offensively, I think we can still win a grinded out game if we stay with that same energy and that same scheme defensively. So I don't see any sort of cracks right now, and I don't feel any reason to be scared about, you know, some epic collapse. So I don't think that it's wrong to necessarily start looking ahead. I mean, you look like we saw a Portland quit during this game tonight, and I think that was not just quitting for this game. I think it was quitting for the series, and you know, I think that's what we should expect in the next game. I think we're going to come out. The crowd will be super energetic. It's a Saturday. It's a, you know, an afternoon game. So it should be packed. It should be energized. Nobody had to work all day. Everybody should have a nice rest and be energized and seal that home court advantage and put them away.
Yeah, Kevin, let me ask you one follow-up question to that. Now we're confident. We're looking ahead to Golden State, San Antonio, whoever the victor of that is. Obviously, we want to play San Antonio, although if Golden State limps their way in, they might not be that terrifying a foe either. With that being said, a lot of the talk has been that the Trailblazers are the matchup that the Pelicans desperately desire. They just match up well with them. They played them well this year. They had confidence going against them. Even the last game that they lost, they had every opportunity to win, even with Anthony Davis, skimpy ankle, and Rajon Rondo not in the lineup. With that being said, when the Pelicans go to face another team like Golden State with, you know, a potential backcourt of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, a team that the Pelicans do play well against, but haven't enjoyed a whole lot of success against other than the victory last Saturday. Do you feel the Pelicans match up with pretty much everybody well across the Western Conference? They're just playing good basketball in general, or do you think they're just taking advantage of nice matchups?
Well, I think the team that we're playing right now, I've said it all along, I thought we were pretty evenly matched, but I didn't expect the Pelicans to rise so much to this occasion defensively, and for Mirotić to show such incredible versatility defensively that allows for Anthony Davis to play center field. So I think this team, this matchup, and the scheme that they run is, with the way that the Pelicans are defending right now, is perfect for us. Now, when you get, if you get a healthy Golden State, then that's a real problem because, you know, who can guard Kevin Durant? You know, and you also have to have, you know, Rajon Rondo and either Klay Thompson or Steph Curry. And look, he's playing well right now. And, you know, CJ McCollum is no slouch, but, you know, that's a whole different ball game. Those are guys who make shots, contested shots, incredibly contested shots. And it's a very good screening team that get those guys free for shots. So it's definitely a different matchup. So you can't expect this to necessarily translate. But like you said, we played them well, and they really have trouble finding somebody to slow down Anthony Davis. And I think having Anthony Davis take a little bit of step back in this series and letting Mirotić and Drew and Rondo get some of the glory is great, because if Golden State is the matchup, you're going to need to ride Anthony Davis, and he's going to have to be front row center and the clear, you know, like we said, we know he's the best player on the court, but he has to be clearly the best player on the court for us to stand a chance.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap this up here. My wife's getting ready for bed. It is 12:20 Eastern Standard Time a.m. It is now officially Friday where I am. Thank you so much to questions from Sei, Reichert, Dogs on Top, Michael Flynn. We apologize for some of the questions about Boogie's future and Nola not getting to those. We will definitely get to those in depth coming up in the future. Thank you so much to David Fisher. He's at fish_TBW. He's trying to keep his baby quiet right now, so we're not going to bother him again. And thank you again to our first time caller Chris Connor. Follow him at Impatient Bull. He's got a great article on thebirdrights.com today. I encourage everybody to check it out. Stunning work by him. Glad to have him on the team. Before we let you go, Chris, why don't you give us some final thoughts and plug any of your upcoming work with the site?
I would definitely say to go and read that beautiful Drew Holiday piece. If for anyone like me who always felt like the Pelicans were getting the short end of the stick from the national media due to some ignorance and just some laziness on a few different, you know, publications that didn't watch enough Pelicans basketball to make some of the comments that they made. That article was a little bit of a reset. It was quite refreshing to see. While Jalen Rose was one of the few people that were, you know, that were positive and picked the Pelicans to win the series, but you see guys like Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith and Ben Simmons and Chris Broussard, you know, all talk openly about either A, them being wrong about certain elements of the Pelicans, whether it be Drew Holiday or you know, Rajon Rondo, or them openly praise them. And, you know, a guy like Max Kellerman openly say that Drew Holiday is, you know, he isn't just a guy that plays okay defense plays good defense and is okay offensively. He called him a legit, great two-way player. That's, you know, refreshing to hear, you know, from, especially with the narrative that is always passed around about the Pelicans not having help and Anthony Davis being surrounded by a bunch of bums. So, definitely go read that as well as everyone else's content that they're putting up at the Bird Rights. I'm happy to be a part of the team.
Glad to have you, man. Great work as always. Great job on the podcast tonight. This has been a raw, uncut version. Sorry for my lack of preparation. I am doing this totally off the cuff. Before we go anywhere, Kevin Berrios, we have a nice announcement. 100,000 downloads. We've been working really hard on this podcast ever since dating back to July when I joined the Bird Rights. So I just want to give a high five to you and Ali Cosell, who I hope is listening to this. Actually, I hope he's having a party in the Smoothie King Center right now, backstage with the Pelicans, Alvin Gentry, and all those guys. But with that being said, Kevin, why don't you give us some final thoughts? Talk a little bit more about your experience, some of the joy that was felt in that arena. Pelicans fans have been looking for a victory like this for quite some time. Talk about what it felt like, and then plug yourself at Kevin Beeferbounce, and let's wrap this puppy up.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that too much because I'm about to write an article about that. So look for that tomorrow. I'm going to write what it was like inside the arena, which was obviously electric. I'm sure it translated well onto the TV because it was pretty loud in there. And, you know, it went off. Halftime show went off. Irma Thomas opened it up with the national anthem. I mean, what else could you ask for?
Yeah, what a great setting. Before I let you guys go, NBA TV, a quote from Dame Lillard. He said, "They're making me give the ball up. This is different cover than I've ever seen at any point of my career." So we'll probably be back with some version of Ali and Kevin and maybe Steve DeWald or Dave McKay from Blazers Edge talking about these quotes and so much more. Again, for you guys, all of our listeners, thank you so much for being part of the 100,000. We really appreciate everybody who takes the time to listen to our podcast. I know there's thousands of other podcasts you could be listening to. Thank you so much for making us a part of your day. I'm Preston Ellis, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Let's go, Pels. You are listening to Do You Believe in Magic on OTG and Nothing But Net Network here on Dash Radio. Be sure to follow us on iTunes by searching Do You Believe in Magic and subscribe today.